Director Tyler.
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, I will turn it over to Mr. Whaley-Smith.
Mr. Chair and Supervisors of the Committee, there are a few strictly budget-related items that I'd like to go over. They were pointed out as questions in the overview that your staff put together, and I wanted to provide that detailed information. And then as a closing point, I have a more detailed presentation on workforce development, which is something I'm very excited about. I know that many of you share as a mission, and I would like to show you how we plan on tackling that. And then there are people from the Workforce Funders Alliance here to answer additional questions if necessary. On the economic development budgeting side, typically there is a surplus that is given back to the county from economic development operations to the tune of about $300,000 to $400,000, which really represents the $400,000 of land sales that are attributed to our department. So although we may collect much more than $400,000, only $400,000 is realized in our department's budget. What's changed this year is parking-related revenue. In historical years, the county has collected approximately $1.5 million in parking-related revenue, largely from the lots that are under 794. And with the restructuring and refiguring of 794, we will not be realizing that income and the corollary expense. So you have before you, and also on the screen here, is a map of the freeways that will be impacted by the 794 construction. You will see what we call the CPS Lake Lot here is going to be closed for staging of construction starting in 2014. And there are other requisite dates. So what does that mean for revenue for the department? On the back side of that map, you have a projection prepared by economic development staff, which essentially shows that in lieu of the projected $1.5 million in 2013, there is approximately $500,000 that we are projecting for 2014 and 2015, which is a loss of revenue of $1 million. Now, the actual fiscal impact on our department is not the full $1 million. Because of the relationship that we have worked out with the state of Wisconsin, we are responsible for managing those lease operations, and we are able to collect 50% of the revenue, and 50% has to go back to the state. So if you take off the million of revenue, less the $500,000 we would have had to contribute to the state, that is a net loss in our department of $500,000. Are there any questions related to parking revenue before I move on to the next topic?
Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The parking lots under 794, where you're referring to, looks like it's right at that split between when it goes towards the art museum and when it go towards the home bridge.
Yes, correct? Chair and Supervisor. If you look, what you will see is the sort of that blue area. And if you remember Rocky Marco's presentation on the lakefront plan, that's exactly where the new ramps are going to be going. So the ramps used to head north onto Lincoln Memorial Drive. Instead, mm-hmm. they will be headed south towards the Third Ward, which has the great benefit for the state of Wisconsin and consequently Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee of freeing up that very valuable land for future economic development purposes. The consequence of that is now where we used to have parking. There will be off-ramps, so we will be losing that revenue going forward.
Okay. Who manages those parking lots?
That's currently being done by CPS under a management agreement. Prior to me coming here, there was a decision made to move that lot off of a standard lease payment, monthly payment, more to a managing agreement to collect a percentage of the revenues, precisely because of the 794 issue and no one willing to enter into a long-term lease given that uncertain destiny.
Gotcha. Do we know what type of customers park there?
No, I guess we don't have that. We have not invested in that research because of its pending closure. It has suffered significantly since the reopening of O'Donnell. I can tell you that. Now, whether those two are directly cause and impact related, We haven't invested in that kind of study, but from the management's perspective, since O'Donnell reopened after the accident and had lower monthly rates than were being offered here, there is currently existing vacancies. So we will not be hitting our projections on this lot for 2013 in sort of a dramatic fashion. We're able to cover that through other cost savings in the department.
Gotcha. And is it a fair estimate that revenue at O'Donnell could increase because those customers might park at O'Donnell?
If that question was asked 2 years ago when O'Donnell reopened, I think that would have been a good analysis, because the answer is yes, that has happened already. Whether it will happen in the future is a deeper analysis that we have to do. I understand that we're scheduled for a closed session on Wednesday, where I can share with you existing parking data for the downtown area and its potential impact on our own parking revenue on these existing lots. And if there are any other questions, I can answer them at that point as well.
Gotcha. Thank you, Director. And I think it would be valuable to have some type of engagement with those, with that customer base, so that they know that we want them to park at our other structure and continue to receive that revenue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anyone else? Supervisor Cullen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm glad you mentioned Wednesday. So we had a lengthy discussion on Friday about O'Donnell Park and the potential sale of it. And we were told that you were the point person, so you'll be available Wednesday to meet with us?
Absolutely. I've cleared my schedule to make sure that I'm available.
Thank you. And you can bring any documentation back and forth, emails that you've had regarding this issue. So if we ask, has there been discussions with potential buyers, discussion of potential price, you can give that, you can share that information with us, correct?
At this point, rather than discussing the details of what we have or have not discussed in negotiations, I will say that that session on Wednesday, I will relay to you the information that I have on the transaction to the extent that we have it. So, but I'd rather not get into what has and has not been negotiated.
Thank you.
So, for Wednesday, part of the presentation before us will be on the closed session. Is that what I heard? That's your intent?
Yes, that's my expectation. And I think is a healthy way to have those conversations regarding pending negotiations.
Okay. Anyone else? Any Supervisor Stafford?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Three new positions are coming to your department.
Perfect segue, Supervisor. Right. Thank you for asking that question.
Tell us about that.
Yes. So the second document you have, there's a more detailed memo that was distributed about why we're making this transition. You have before you as a handout simply the organizational charts from that memo. When taking over the department, the short answer to your question is we have three existing positions related to economic development and real estate. Mm-hmm. We are simply reclassifying those positions to have new job titles and job descriptions more accurate of what those individuals are doing and what we expect them to do going forward. And the reason for that is based on up-to-date management practices. One of the potentially unhealthy aspect of business departments or government departments are information silos, where you have one person doing a particular task that's not connected to larger planning, not connected to other people that are doing work in that department. And you can suffer some real setbacks if those people leave or those people are sick or whatever else the case may be. So this is really about continuity, but also restructuring the department in a way that gets us more towards a culture of collaboration and communication and capable individuals in those positions. I had the great fortune in my department of having some people there that are very talented and are also have been recently installed in those positions and are very much looking forward to developing that culture within economic development. So on a very technical basis, what's happening is simply related. This is the 2013 or 2012 organizational chart. 2013 has been a transition year. So 2012, sort of the lower left-hand corner of that chart looked like this. We had a real estate manager that was responsible for tax foreclosure and leasing and coordinating consultants. As a sort of subordinate to that position, there was a real estate agent that was also doing tax foreclosures, leases, and coordinating appraisals rather than consultants, and was really treated as sort of a junior position, but was nearly not referenced as such. And then we had an economic development coordinator, and that person was responsible for participating in all the planning. So we had a big disconnect. People that were responsible for implementing, you know, economic development and doing real estate transactions that weren't participating in the larger planning efforts. As a consequence, both of them suffer. So we are attempting to correct that. So instead of following this design, if you go to the next sort of corner, we're instead putting that into three project managers' positions. So instead of people that only have one particular skill in a transaction, we're looking for people that can follow the transaction from planning all the way through implementation and closing the deal. So it's in management, you know, lingo, it's referred to as a multi-domain skilled project manager. So if we go back to sort of actual positions, the real estate manager position has been vacant all of 2013. Mm-hmm. The real estate agent was filled shortly before I took place in April, got here in April, and the economic development coordinator position was vacated in June, so June or July. So it's a perfect time to be making this transition. The incumbent that we have for the real estate agent definitely has these multi-domain skills, and there should not be an issue transitioning them in that direction. So it's not any new positions. It's just restructuring three positions that were part of a previous hierarchy that just doesn't make sense for the work that we're doing now and projecting going forward.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Steve. Supervisor Collins.
I just had a question. Does this impact in this department, does it impact your personnel costs?
The expectation is that it will. Again, this is a very timely opportunity to do this. There's been the some discussion of the JEQ process through HR. We're in the middle of that process, and we expect with the updated and revised job descriptions that the JEQs, as they mark to market, will be setting that salary range. Our contingency to sort of cover that is that we will not be filling the senior management, the senior project manager, unless our budget allows. Depending on what those salary ranges come back at, we may be able to fill that position in the fourth quarter of 2014, or we may not be able to fill it at all. So in that sense, it's good news that there's nobody in that position because we have a vacancy in that economic development coordinator position. So that we will not have any layoffs as far as personnel is concerned. We just will continue. We have three positions now. One of them is not filled. Going into 2014, we still have three positions, and one of them will stay unfilled pending that completed JEQ process. And then that decision will be made at that time, whether it remains vacant or whether we bring that person on board.
So So the people who are there, how would you expect, do you have any preliminary information on how their compensation will be affected?
For the incumbent position, and they're probably watching right now, and it's just draft information at this point, the salary ranges are comparable. The big benefit is that it readjusts the range to the tune of increasing the top end of the range between 10% to 15%, so that particular employee has a career path and the ability to grow in that position. So it does correct that. But as far as initial change, depending on where that JEQ lands, it would be in that 5% to 10% range. But the overall cap on that position would allow that opportunity for career development.
I just have sort of maybe a philosophical question for you or Mr. Tyler. It seems like somewhere you're planning in this budget with all these JEQs, and it doesn't sound like a lot of these JEQs are going to cause people to go down in their compensation from what I've heard so far. It sounds like you have plans in the budget that the money's going to be there. And Where would I find that? Maybe in your budget, in any budget. Maybe Mr. Fudge can answer that. Somebody has a chance to get a 10 to 15% raise. Maybe there are other people that have a chance to get 10 to 15% raise. Maybe that's not where the direction that
Mr.
the board wants to go.
I think Mr. Fudge might be able to address it more broadly because it's not just this division that is an issue.
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, in some cases where we had already known about the changes, action items that have taken place up through the July cycle, we did include those changes in the budget. So, you would see those listed as 2013 actions in many cases. In other cases, due to the partially the timing and the uncertainty, is that the expectation is the departments will manage within the salary budget that they're given based on what was known at the time, just as Mr. Whaley Smith has described.
If so, is it safe to assume that, and this isn't calling out Mr. Whaley Smith, but that these departments are planning in their budget for these salary increases already? And so that if the board needs to find places to trim budgets, maybe it's in the salary portions of the budget.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, I would not exactly say that because we didn't know. I don't believe there's any instances where we planned or knew ahead of time that the JEQ process would lead to increases that we've given additional salary dollars. I can't think of any instances where we did that. The only places we've done it is where, if you look at the July cycle, the June cycle, there were action items on there that were ultimately approved or took place. Then we accounted for them because they were known changes. Other than that, not knowing what the changes are, we didn't budget for that.
Mr. Whaley Smith seems to, maybe he can answer this, seems to be able to say, well, if this happens, we can absorb this.
If I could answer that question directly for our department, in this particular circumstance, two of the positions that are being reconfigured as project managers, and the expectation is that they would actually be at a lower price. And so our projected salary cost in our department, as far as budgeted, is actually $40,000 less than it was in a previous year. So if you were to cut salaries in our department, it would result in actual layoffs in our department. And again, the plan is to, depending on where those JEQs come back, whether or not we can afford that senior project manager, that decision would be made at that point. And so that's how we've structured our budget internally, is to make sure that it does not result in a net salary increase.
You're welcome, Supervisor. So if I'm, let me understand that there were some 2013 actions. There have been 2013 actions in various departments to create or augment the salaries of positions. You're telling me that with respect to these two project manager positions, their salary is going to be lowered in 2014?
These project managers' positions do not exist currently.
Okay.
Currently, there was a real estate manager position that has been vacated and an economic development coordinator position that has been vacated. So if you were to lump together the three costs for these individuals, again, many of them are no longer working for the county, and you were then to compare it to these three individuals, it would be a comparable number. There's no individuals in any particular position that it will be receiving a decrease. And currently, there's only an incumbent in one of these positions. There were vacancies in two of these, and I filled one of them on a temporary basis until the board, if they are willing, to help me set up this new structure, and then I'll be filling that second project manager position.
Okay, which brings me to this point. With respect to a zero tax levy, and this is just something that I want to comment on. It's got nothing to do with you in particular. But if there are increases in salaries, and we have a recommended budget in front of us, and we will take a look at that budget, but I just want to put out there that with respect to, and this is, again, it's just a statement, with respect to what the county executive does as it relates to vetoes, we just have to keep in mind that there were some salary increases, and with the reclassification or retitling of positions for salaries to go up, then that means that it has to come from somewhere. My point is that it has to come somewhere. And again, you need not comment, but I'm just making a statement. Because what's happened since I've been here is that the county board has tried to be very prudent, and in the presentation of the preliminary presentation to us by our staff, we saw that since 1999, the budget tax levy has gone up. Was it 3.4%? 6% by average on average, 2.6% on average, and inflation has been annually going up about 2.4%. So, as far as I'm concerned, we've been doing a great job. I just want to put that out there because the county board is frequently criticized for not being as smart, as not being as diligent, as not being as prudent as it actually has been. I just want to make that point. I just want to put that out there so that anybody who is here is listening, and anybody who sees this streaming understands what our experience has been. Supervisor Jersey.
First of all, I'm sorry I had to step out, but I have seen the organizational chart and appreciate the director for bringing this, because at least we see the flow of the department, and I actually have criticized other departments for not being clear. For example, emergency management, you know. So in that regard, I do appreciate that. The one area that I have had problems with, and this predates T. Gwaley Smith's here, is the use of that economic development coordinator position. Previously, that was Jill Didier, who's left county. But a lot of those descriptions, if you look at it, relationships with municipalities. Now, I'm the elected official for 4 municipalities. And as the elected official, I have relationships with those municipalities. I know maybe some folks from Milwaukee are more attuned to aldermanic districts than perhaps I am. It may be a little different in that regard, but those of us who don't represent Milwaukee very much have that relationship with our municipal mayors, for example, and deal all the time with those mayors and some of their staffs. Part of this job description is participation in regional planning efforts. To me, that translates into policy. Policy is the prerogative of the board. Now, I'm not suggesting the economic development director shouldn't be at those kinds of events. They should be. But I want that person to understand their role. They don't become a super non-elected representative of the district. They have a supervisor of that district that takes on that role. Convene forums. Public hearings, this is something that I've even suggested the county executive has not fully understood, the difference between hearing from the public and our role as supervisors in doing that. He's an executive. He executes policies that are made by this board. So I certainly don't want someone coming into districts thinking they're going to convene forums and hear from the public to do their own policy making and work around the system in place, which is really here to take participation to every single person in our district to elect the representative they want. And then the networking piece, that certainly is something that I can see the economic development coordinator doing. Now, I certainly would want them to work with the TIF districts and so on, but it's so necessary for this person, if they're going to do that kind of work, to recognize the difference between their job and an elected position's job. And the recent person, and I won't make it personal, but went through some planning with the city of St. Francis, never communicated with my office, got the whole thing really fleshed out, and then brought a resolution to me and said, here, carry this through the county board. Really? I know nothing about this. No one has discussed this with me, and I'm just supposed to then carry this through. Really ruffled my feathers. So this is not the kind of activity an economic development coordinator should be doing that contravenes the elected person's role in representing their district. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be that coordinator position, but hopefully they understand the difference between carrying out their role and that of a policymaker. It's different, and I'm not so sure the prior person completely understood that. Maybe it's because she herself was a former mayor and understood that side of it. But I would just be cautious about that job description. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Supervisor. Any other comments, questions? Supervisors Borkowski, Taylor, do you have anything?
I apologize.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Just two more items I want to cover to see if there's to be responsive to the information request that was put out, and then also get to the workforce development one where I know people are very interested. So the next component is a handout that you have before you. I didn't keep a copy of it, but it's on the back of the workforce development. So it should pop up here in just a minute. Something's going on, curious with the presentation here, so as I reload it. But essentially revolves a master property inventory request. So there's been conversations about the money that's received from UWM land sales, and the county executive budget indicates where those resources are allocated from the the county exec's budget perspective. Our department has two of those. One of them is a real property inventory. Currently, the way property inventory is handled is that there are at least five different departments with their own lists that they are managing. We have the comptroller's office that keeps track of the debt associated with each property. We have the treasurer's office that keeps a list of the tax foreclosures. We have our own list in economic development that we were handed off of excess properties. You have an incredible wealth of data through the architectural and engineering department. So we have all this data out there, but there is not a consistent core list that everybody is turning to. And we have the capability to do it if we focus our energy and efforts on doing it with some financial resources as a one-time expense to create that method and process using our county's McCamless system, the GIS system, to create a master property or inventory so that we make sure we're tracking everything that needs to be sold in our department versus preserved for parks or DOT or other facilities uses. So that is part of the request as well. Finally, on workforce development, there is a proposed expenditure there as well that's part of these efficiency initiatives that are being proposed. And I want to walk you through how our department is looking at it so you can understand from a policy perspective of existing policy of the board related to wanting to put funds toward workforce development and how administratively as a department I would propose handling it. So we've talked a lot about strategic planning. I think the one thing that we do have in place as a county is a strong mission statement. And so this policy, or the implementation of this policy, is developed around that mission statement, which is Milwaukee County government will provide high-quality, responsive services that enhance self-sufficiency, personal safety, economic opportunity, and quality of life for all its people. And it's certainly our department's...
Is that what's in the light bulb?
Yes.
Because I can't read this.
No, I understand. And no. I wanted to be responsive to the Green Print Initiative and not print out a 100-page report for you.
Okay.
So what you do have on that sheet before you, though, is a link to this entire presentation. So anytime you want to get back to it, just follow that link, and it's all electronic. So that's the ICR department's primary goal, although we affect all of these, is around self-sufficiency and economic opportunity. So what problem are we trying to solve here? It's really an employment problem because economic development is not spread equally across all areas of Milwaukee County. So these are devastating statistics that many of you know, but it bears repeating, is that for African-American men, the employment rate has gone down from 73.4% to 44.7%, which means we have a 55% unemployment problem in that demographic. And you can see that for Hispanic men, that number is also very low, meaning we have a 35% unemployment rate in that sector. And that puts us nationally in the bottom five. We are the third worst in that category, and we need to dedicate some energy and resources to that. For African-American men, you've seen the unemployment rate. That's different than the poverty rate. So from a poverty perspective, this is something that actually hits women in these communities much higher. So you can see that the poverty rate among Latino or Hispanic males and females, together as African-American males and females, although the employment rates might be higher for females in those classifications, the poverty rate is just as high and in many circumstances higher. This has a real impact on Milwaukee County, not only for the quality of life of the people, but also the resources that are spent at the state or other levels. So this is a chart of the food share caseload. Of course, this is administered by the state. And you can see that that number has nearly doubled after the 2008 financial crisis. Together with W-2 participants, it was actually headed towards a decrease, and then the financial crisis hit, and then the number has since skyrocketed. Other things that this impacts that Milwaukee County does, now these are state numbers for Milwaukee County, so they're not our numbers of the individuals that we incarcerate, but you can see that the rate of incarceration of African-American men, which is definitely a poverty issue, has also increased dramatically. Where does that put us? Well, it puts us worst in the United States for the incarceration of black men. So what do we do about it? In our department and otherwise, the general economic development planning that's going around in this area, if you all remember the Plinko game from The Price is Right, and you have the Plinko chips, and you need to figure out which is the winning chip at the end. So this is the analysis that we went through. You can do things like housing subsidies to address this problem. Of course, planning and coordination helps. Infrastructure, like getting people to jobs, is always very important. You can look at increasing the regulation to demand certain jobs in certain areas, but that has an economic consequence. You can look at geographic strategies, lower regulation, et cetera, et cetera. Sort of the matrix that we use when we're looking at these, there's two different indices that we're looking at. The first is what strategies are going to actually make us most competitive for getting jobs into the state of Wisconsin, southeastern Wisconsin, and Milwaukee County and all our municipalities. So that's what you see on the axis going up on the left is sort of analysis of what makes us most competitive versus economic opportunity for low-income residents to address this real poverty issue. So although you may have in the lower right-hand corridor or lower corridor, things like subsidies that can increase economic opportunity, they tend to have a decrease impact on competitiveness. So it's really this corridor here that we want to look at, things that make us more competitive and also have a higher impact. So the things in the left-hand quadrant are lower impact. We want to focus on high-impact things that still make us competitive. And that's really training, so we have the highest skilled workforce to compete for jobs. Or you can do it through employment subsidies. But that brings forth the second matrix, which, of course, is cost. If you look at things that are very high cost, employment subsidies are very high cost. So you want to focus on things that are have a high impact but a lower cost. And you'll see that the crossover between those two that you start to see is related to training. And we can talk till we're blue in the face about why we think training works, but there are dozens of economic development professionals and implementers that have a track record related to jobs that are talking about this topic. Unfortunately, part of the recent conversation is you start to hear some rumblings that there is not a skills gap, you know, that there are other reasons why incomes are still low for low-income people. And there is some worth to that analysis, and I'd be happy to go into that. This is a paper by Mark Levine from UWM. What's important about this is that he says that if you look at a national level and at a state level or Milwaukee County as a whole, he questions this challenge, is there actually a skills gap? And I'd love to have a drink with you all to go through that analysis and see if it's whether it's something you agree with. But more importantly, when Mark Levine is looking specifically at low-income communities, he specifically says, well, in low-income communities in Milwaukee, there is a skills gap. And his recommendation is to focus on workforce training to reduce that skills gap. This is a consistent theme for all people that are looking at poverty, whether it's looking at the incarceration rate. The policy recommendations, again, include focusing on employment opportunities, and training individuals for those opportunities. Whether it's people looking at women in poverty, their recommendations are consistent to focus on this skills gap and implement things across different sectors. They recommend in this report the social service and healthcare sectors as well. From a state perspective, they're looking at this workforce challenge as well. But what does it mean to look at workforce training? What it means and where the data is really showing some really positive developments is related to a strategy called a sectoral-based intermediary. So this is the latest Public Policy Forum report that says that we should be looking at sector-based strategies. When you hear sector, think industry, construction, manufacturing, automotive, healthcare, green technologies. Show considerable promise, but not all sectors are alike in their relevance to the unemployed population. They talk about efforts on the healthcare sector and then focus on those successes, but expanding them to different sectors. One of the base levels that we've had a great amount of success with is the relationship with WRTP in construction. They acknowledge the success of that program. And finally, they say that we should continue to look at the construction sector, but to look at other sectors as well. This is something that is not just the Milwaukee region. There have been comprehensive data reports with two-year control groups versus test groups that show that there's a significant increase in wages, benefits, and employment for people that go through sectoral-based intermediaries. From a healthcare perspective and from employers, they show that it's a return of investment of over 146% for those communities. So if there's more questions about what the policy says, why this makes sense, I'm happy to answer those. But here is the core of the issue of why we should be focused on sectoral-based intermediaries, given their success, is that currently when we're looking at economic development policy for the county, we're just looking at the tip of the iceberg. We're looking at our land, and we're trying to attach all sorts of economic development policy just to the land and really cutting ourselves short of the other things we can do to participate in economic development. One of them is a funder. What sectors does a county have a connection to, whether it's the medical industry and our BHD work or the green technology and fleet technology because we have such a massive fleet of maintenance vehicles and county buses, or it's the construction sector because we are building a lot of buildings as well. Placement, what customers do we have that need to be placed? We serve a lot of people through child support services and otherwise that we might want to place those individuals. Trainer, are we currently doing training programs in-house that have a benefit to other sectors of the economy? Employer, what skills do our own employees need to be prepared for the future? And most importantly, really participating in the conversation of workforce development and economic development and looking for those opportunities to come into place. Yep.
Director, with respect to, I've seen a lot of parts, and Supervisor Cohen asked, what does this have to do with the budget?
Yes, so there's a $400,000 request for workforce development in the budget, and this is how we would allocate it. Is that we would be a part of a network called the Workforce Funding Alliance. So this is a national network of funders across the country that are creating a uniform system for measuring workforce development and making sure it's impactful. They're in over 151 communities across the country. And I'll skip the data on that.
Let me ask you this.
Yep.
So is this just think tank work, or is this going to create some jobs?
No, this is absolutely aimed at creating jobs. So you had a program called the Ready to Work Initiative, which went straight into one sector.
Yes.
What this is saying is that in lieu of investing in just one sector that has its limitations, expand the sectors that we're working on using the Workforce Funding Alliance and all the sectors that they're working on. Right now, we're only investing in that very left blue sliver of the pie, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of more jobs and a lot more effectiveness that we can use with our funds. So we're asking for your permission to invest in that Workforce Funders Alliance to the tune of $400,000. Those funds would be given by the Workforce Alliance in partnership with the other pooled funds of over 20 people. 20 foundations to invest in all of the people that are implementing those sector-based strategies that have proven data results to get the job done. So we would ask for your support of that $400,000 for the Workforce Funders Alliance to get into the hand of these implementers.
So, again, that looks I could go for this. I appreciate that. But on the other hand, how is this going to create jobs? Now, you've indicated that you're going to spend, or at least $400,000 would go toward collaborating with the alliance. I'm still looking as to how that's going to happen.
Yeah.
One thing, I said junior achievement there, and for 12 years, I was a volunteer teacher, a consultant with Junior Achievement. How is that going to help or that group where it says implementation? How is that group going to help us to generate jobs is what I want.
So what our funds would be used for is supporting what are called sector-based intermediaries. The best example of that is an organization like WRTP Big Step that is a sector-based intermediary for the construction and manufacturing sectors. So the $1 million that was invested by the county over the last 2 years has resulted in career advancement and actual job placement currently of about 300 jobs. Now, they still have 6 months in their process. They are way ahead of the game when it comes to recruitment and training on placement. They're about 10 to 15% short of their projections, but should be able to catch up. But again, that's just one sector of the economy. We would like to expand that, and we internally, with essentially three staff doing all of our land sales, we don't have the ability to be doing the underwriting and the monitoring of all of those funds. Furthermore, if we put our funds into this pool, they get matched by federal resources that this alliance can go out and get. So it's more funds for investing in workforce. And again, it would be focused on these sector-based intermediaries that have proven results related to creating jobs. And they essentially find the individuals in low-income communities through training partners, find the employers and where they're going to be hiring in the next 6 months to a year, and develop specific training programs for those actual employment needs. And again, if anyone wants to spend more time, I'd be happy to sit down with this data because there is hard data and test and control groups that shows that this results in real jobs.
You asked if anybody would like to sit down. Supervisor Jersey, is there a possibility that at the next or very soon for your committee, at your committee, that such a presentation could be provided?
I was thinking the same thing. This is really a good policy discussion. I think it's in a lot of ways well thought out, but I think a committee level to have a thorough discussion is probably a more appropriate place. This kind of discussion gets way more involved than just budgetary at this point, but yeah. I agree. It probably should be at the committee level.
Particularly since Director Smith is Whaley Smith is indicating that there's a match, there's a federal match possibly with respect to some of these connections. So I'm interested in creating jobs, and that's why I asked you, Supervisor Jersey, if such could be scheduled.
Yeah, and we can definitely schedule this. So both Whaley Smith and I are here to have a more thorough discussion. I also think, I sat on the Milwaukee Area Technical College Board, and the mission of that institution is to do this.
Yes.
So I keep wondering, where are our community partners? Not that this isn't maybe a role that the county has, but the actual institution that has this mission needs to be, in my opinion, much more considered and worked with than we currently do. But absolutely, we can put this on the ECD committee and have a better discussion.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Were you finished, sir?
I'm finished. There are members from the advisory committee of the Workforce Funding Alliance, if you're interested in hearing from them.
I have two cards. I do have two cards. And for anybody else who would like to speak to this budget, individuals can sign cards and forward them. Supervisor Haas and Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I love the idea of creating real careers and jobs. Why do we not just spend money on it directly? Why don't we spend money on it directly if it's going to do as much as our Ready to Work program has done? I think that's proven itself. So if we can get more, why don't we pay for it, put the money into it directly instead of waiting on the land sale?
Yeah, no, I think as far as why the shift, we need to become a part of the Workforce Funding Alliance ecosystem, and currently we're not. We need our funds to be part of the match that are leveraged for federal purposes. We need the underwriting and expertise of the partners that are at the table. We need to be part of a consistent monitoring program to be able to do that. So I see this as investing directly with really strong partners. I mean, there are 20 partners that spend way more than we do on workforce development. So to be able to leverage their funds on what has already been a successful program, I think is a huge step in the right direction.
That's put money into it, then I'd say. Think about it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a night and day difference in terms of the conversation we're having now than the one we had a year or 2 years ago when the administration practically belittled the idea that we should even have any involvement in workforce development with the veto that would have taken the allocation down to $100,000, the original allocation, with all the criticism that they lobbed over the involvement and the way in which we're doing it, whereas what's before us now in many ways is a validation of that, of not only the investment but also the strategy, the sector-based strategy. I understand, or what I do understand of the presentation is that you'd like to take that sort of a step further, and I appreciate that that's the level of analysis that you've been able to undertake. It's the kind of idea that I wish would have been we could have been working on before. I did get one invitation to meet with the Alliance at the urging of the county exec, and I did do that. I guess I'd like to understand, in terms of what's being proposed, a couple of things. One, what is the proposed relationship? It's my understanding that the other funders do not just sort of turn their money over to the Alliance. You're a member of the Alliance, you make an investment, but you still are in control of your individual investment. Is that what's being proposed, or are we just investing in the Alliance and leaving it to them to then reallocate our investment?
So there are sort of three ways that funds come into the Alliance. The one that you described are restricted aligned funds, where there are federal requirements or other requirements on the fund. So people participate in the Alliance to make that aligned giving sort of perspective. These are typically departments that have substantial staff to do the underwriting and contract compliance, and entire departments monitoring these things. What I would suggest is that our pool comes in at the pooled resource level. So there are several funders that contribute at the pooled resource. And what happens to those funds is that they are given away by RFP using the members of the Alliance. So they take the expertise of the people from the members of the Alliance, a different RFP committee, depending on what it is, to evaluate those, make sure it's consistent with where, you know, funds need to be placed as far as statistics on growth sectors, et cetera, et cetera. Then they would make the award and report back to the Alliance directly. We would, of course, get all of those reports and be able to monitor that on a yearly basis. The instruction that would be given is that we want to be investing in sector-based intermediaries. So there are several groups that receive funds. Several have been mentioned, whether it's Junior Achievement that does financial literacy, or it is MATC that does the actual training. There are other financial resources for those. What is very restricted is for the sectoral-based intermediaries, and so that would be where our funds would be invested. But as far as the sectors that the Alliance would choose to grow in, that would be done on an objective basis based on those labor supports. We know that construction is a heavy growth sector, but we also know healthcare is as well. So I'd imagine from these funds that those would be aligned towards those industries, and if we can collect the data in a consistent way and continue to make the argument to you and the other decision makers, including the county executive, to show the data that this does work, we can continue to look at this as a future investment. But we do need to bring in partners. As Supervisor Jurczyk said, bringing in and understanding where other community partners are on this, and my perspective is that we need to align with that, and the way to do that is through the Workforce Funders Alliance.
Okay. I take a little exception to the statements that this was all about construction before, because I believe they've reported in multiple categories. And to the extent that it's been weighted to construction, I think that was perhaps the administration's previous unwillingness to engage on this really at all. So I appreciate that you've looked at ways in which we could be better connected to the area, to those sectors that are related to our key activities. But I'll be interested, I guess, to see more detail about what the relationship would be and how we would make sure that by investing in the pool of resources, we would actually get those connections and not just, you know, just add a little money to what they're already doing. The other thing I guess I'd like some understanding of is how the administration sees this fitting in overall, and that they earmark this investment of $400,000 in a category that they've described as one-time efficiency investments, the $5.6 million list of earmarks. You know, obviously we did $1 million investment initially. How does this is this seen by the administration as an exit investment if we're now going down to 400 and we're doing it in the category you've described as one time?
I'll just quickly, from my perspective, I see it as a competition. You know, I think that's the way that it was phrased for the efficiency project. You know, we were given an instruction by the county exec, come up with your best ideas to fulfill the mission of your department. It'd have to be the county exec to answer whether he continues is going to do that in, you know, that investment style of competition of ideas. I'm a competitor. I intend to compete, and for me, the restructuring this for the funding alliance makes me a better competitor because I got more teammates and I got better data. So as far as me, I certainly intend to keep competing for this. But, you know, the amount of $400,000 was chosen carefully because there are other things that the county does that are really economic development related. Transit, parks has a huge impact on economic development. You know, the work in BHD and otherwise. You know, I wish I had different competition so that resources for this didn't take away from some of those other key components. So that's sort of the framework that has been given to me at the department level. And as far as whether that's going to continue in future budgets, I don't know if that's a decision been made, but that's sort of the signal that I've been given.
So was $400,000, was that the request?
$400,000 was the request, that's correct.
I think, you know, even with this strategy, it'll be necessary for the department to remain engaged in trying to connect to, if you want to make those connections to the other activities of the county, to remain engaged, because quite frankly, while the Economic Development Department wasn't interested in the program, so several other departments were interested in how they might have tied into it. All of those directors are no longer with us. But so someone's got to provide that continuity to really realize the promise that you've laid out. Is it possible to send us this link? So that's
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Well, I'd like to meet with you. I'd like to meet with you. Anyone else on this organization?
Not on this specifically, on the budget.
Go right ahead.
On page 153, just so I understand how numbers are working here, you've got a revenue decrease by $1 million due to the impending closure of several parking lots in the 794 corridor. And just for our information, that's the Home Bridge area. We're going to lose $1 million there. There's potential sale of O'Donnell, which does parking down there. Is this $1 million in any way being offset by the sale of O'Donnell?
It's not the way our budget has been structured. Our budget has been structured, if you see in previous years, for example, on page 153 that you're looking on, the economic development side, basically contributed $300,000 back to the tax levy, and we were able to do that because we were collecting this lease revenue and our department was not utilizing it internally. We are no longer able to do that to the tune of $500,000. So for the first time, we are receiving some tax levy in our department because of that loss of $1 million in revenue. We are exploring additional ways to increase the parking revenue, looking at other areas, and also looking at cell phone revenue as a potential as well, understanding the complications and logistics with that, and it can only be, you know, in certain areas. So we would like to recoup some of that revenue. We don't know yet how all this is going to shake out because this is a relatively new issue, as in 2013, that we've had to confront.
But there's no budget around the proposed $14 million sale there. You're not counting on any of that?
Correct. The land sales of $5.7 million are the expected revenue from the Innovation Campus, which has already been sold, and they are simply making payments on a note.
And you're not assuming any other revenues from any other sales, just the one we know of?
On our budget side of things, we only project $400,000 of land sales. The rest of the land sales, like the 5.7, get over to the overall budget, and that's where my knowledge becomes
maybe
limited.
That was a better question for...
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, there's $400,000 of land sale revenue that is continuing past practice in DAS Economic Development.
But the only land sales you've got in the budget projected are from the UWM Innovation Park. Is
correct.
Okay. And with regard to the 794 Lake Freeway planning and the lost revenue, this is going to restructure ramps, and we are going to be losing, I think, parking permanently. Do you have a understanding of how much potential lost revenue that's going to be? Do we know that yet?
I don't know that we have all the numbers that you're looking for, but we have a substantial step in the right direction that are related to the downtown parking situation and the O'Donnell contemplated sale, which I can share the parking data as part of that presentation on Wednesday.
Just 794. Take O'Donnell off the table for now. Just 794, as they restructure those ramps, if you recall, they're going to restructure the ramps, so there's actually another... parcel made available for development down at the lakefront. But those restructured ramps, as I understand it, are being pulled further south, further back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to take up some of the underneath space. I'm asking you, what is the potential loss of parking revenue going forward with that permanent loss of space, not just temporary?
$1 million. So that is permanent because that one CPS Lake lot is 90% of our collected revenue. And that is already off the table. We know that that's off the table. It might be like $920,000 instead of $1 million. But remember, half of that we had to give to the state.
Right.
So for our department, it's a $500,000 net operating income issue.
So this is permanent. This isn't a temporary loss.
That is correct.
Okay. So, you know, again, I really question the wisdom now of even talking about selling off O'Donnell if we're going to continue to lose parking like that. So, I just to try to understand the picture.
The two issues are connected, and I'll be happy to give you the data on how I see that they are connected in the presentation on Wednesday.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Supervisor Bowen?
Mr. Chair, I just want to allow the speakers to speak and then have the opportunity to speak after.
What is this you want them to speak toward? Go ahead.
No, the cars that you have on the subject of the workforce.
I have two cars, but I thank you.
Yeah, so I just want to hear their testimony.
With respect to, I remember something about one-time allotments. Is that somewhere in the budget? Because I keep hearing it's $400,000. Is that the land sales, $400,000?
Yes, it is.
Okay, as opposed to something else?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have cards from Karen Gotzler and Gail Lannis.
Yes.
L. Lannis?
Gail, you want
to? Janice. Oh, okay.
Yannis.
Pardon me.
Yannis.
Gail Yannis. Thank you.
Hispanic
Man of the Year 2012? Mr. Yannis.
And South Milwaukee resident.
And South Milwaukee resident.
Yes.
Uh, If the two of you would like to proceed, please.
Well, thank you very much for allowing us to speak at this session. And thank you again for the consideration of our program going on down the road here. I think I would like in your next meeting here, your committee meeting that you're going to have, is to allay the concerns that we are almost a middleman type of situation here. Why don't we give directly to that organization? But we are a unique organization. Collaboration is big in our organization. We are a public, private, employer-driven area of funding. We have a lot of ideas at the table, but we give you the opportunity to work with two national funders that will be able to almost double your money as you place it into the funding alliance. And that is, we are also very opportunistic in our partnerships that we have formed with the community. There's a lot of that we have learned over the past 5 years, and we have really been able to fund in areas where the public funding can't go. In other words, there are programs that build capacities of those organizations that we fund. And we can't get that out of the public side of things, but we do get it out of the private side of things. Capacity building for organizations, you know, to make themselves better, to make sure that they are pricing the programs where they should be. And you should also understand that you should have trust in our ability to find good programs and partners. You're working with a group of seasoned funders that have done this for their careers. We have been able to make those partnerships again really work in we are after the same goal as you are. We want people to get back to work in self-sufficient jobs, and not only get into those jobs, but get into those jobs and remain in those jobs, and you know, not work for a place 3 months and then and off the yard to another program. We need to get that stability into the people that we serve. So we do have the same goals as you have, as our whole city does. We want people to work again. And we think that is really going to be part of the public-private partnerships that enable us to, again, reach out to the community and reach out to the employers and work at these things that are innovative, that are different, that have flexibility to them, that we are after sectors that are craving positions but need people to enter those. So it does give you, I think, I know, a hand up on your investment, and we will be very, very good stewards, I can assure you, of any funds that you place into our organization.
Ms. Scott, sir? Hearing, did you?
So just to explain roles here, so Gil Yanis is serves on the advisory committee as the chair. Karen and her group provide some of the staffing and administrative functions. So if there's any questions for Karen, she's here to answer those. We want to make sure that you heard from Gil directly from a funder's perspective of why he's participating in the alliance.
Supervisor Bowen, then Lipson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all for coming today. I did have a chance to meet with several members of the Workforce Funding Alliance at the Greater Milwaukee
Helen Bader Foundation.
Helen Bader Foundation, yes. And it was a lot of great information that yes. I learned, and I appreciate the work that you guys do. And it is a lot of good work. I wanted to understand how much local government funding do you get? From the other municipalities?
The Funding Alliance has about 25 funders that are members, mm-hmm. and of those, approximately six of them are public entities, okay. and the rest are private foundations and corporate foundations.
Okay. So, in particular, the City of Milwaukee, how much do they invest in the Alliance every year?
City of Milwaukee funds, aligned funds are somewhere around, from the Community Development Grants Administration Office, are somewhere around $600,000. From the Housing Authority are somewhere around probably about the same. From the Workforce Investment Board, about the same. From pooled funds, it's approximately 25% of that. And then that does not include also the sewage district. The Metropolitan Sewage District also invests. So there are... So there's a number of public entities that are engaged.
Okay. And that's good to know, especially since we essentially every year want to invest in workforce development. We think that it's a very important issue. Through our Ready to Work program, we invest about $500,000 a year for the last 2 years. Is the evaluation that you provide for your programs any different than the evaluation we might have? So we had a third-party audit our Ready to Work program, Baker and Tilly. I know the great thing about intermediaries is that they streamline a lot of things. So if you have read anything about the progress of job training programs in the past, they get funding from a number of different sources. The evaluation on different levels is totally different, and something that definitely needs to be streamlined. So it makes sense to have an intermediary to create some consistency in your evaluation so you can see what works and what doesn't work. I want to get insight from you guys about how you evaluate your programs and if it's the same way that we evaluate ours.
I haven't had an opportunity to look at the details of the evaluation that you provide, but I can tell you that the evaluation that's conducted by Urban Strategy Sector Management meets the highest standards that, that the Department of Labor provides for federal funding and is participant-level data that is collected and shared with all the funders. The benefit to Milwaukee mm-hmm. County would be that the other funders in the collaborative are essentially looking at the same data from the same intermediaries that you would be investing in. So, for example, whether you were talking about automotive maintenance and repair, or you were talking about healthcare placements, or you were talking about construction or manufacturing, essentially all of the members of the Funding Alliance are looking at the same criteria mm-hmm. across all of the evaluations. So the criteria is whatever the highest level of requirement is, but also the costs of that evaluation are significantly less because it's shared among all the members of the Funding Alliance. And then, as Mr. Yannis indicated, is also then also leveraged against other public and private funds at the national level.
Okay. And that would be my first request as far as a question to get clear. Comparing our evaluation to the evaluation of the Workforce Funding Alliance and seeing if there's some similarity there. I do know that you guys also financially support the WRTP Big Step organization and the work they do in training. So since we also fund the same organization, it might be an easy example to look at how you evaluate them through your funding and how we evaluate them through ours. Clearly, they do good work, and they're continuing to do a great thing. But I just want to focus on that 600,000 number for the City of Milwaukee. Is that a number that you could say that goes toward that's applied towards a single industry or program, or is that 600,000 that the City of Milwaukee invests? Is that split up amongst a number of different programs and industry sectors of training?
I'd have to look at the specific data to get you, but for example, WRTP Big Step has been a recipient of Funding Alliance funds through pooled and aligned funds since its inception in 2008. So every year it's a different amount depending on what sector we're looking at and depending on whether you're looking at aligned or pooled funds. Okay. But I would be able to give you a lot of that information directly.
Okay. Thank you. And I think that's a good benchmark for us to keep as we think about how much do we invest in workforce development. I see no problem building on to the success that we've already had, especially if we want to focus on other areas, especially for industries that are more likely for, let's say, women to be into our healthcare fields that we might not touch through focusing on construction trades. But I think there's also, if you look at the sense of how much do you invest, I think, you know, additional funding to target those industries is needed. Not taking one pot of money and splitting it, I think we have more of an opportunity to make a larger impact on our community, especially when you look at the size of these problems to invest more in different areas. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Lipscomb.
I'll defer to if this is coming back to committee today. Thank you.
Do you have a website? Is there a website?
We do have a website. So, Chairman Johnson, it's www.milwaukeewfa.org, and you can also just contact us directly for any additional specific information that you have, and then I'll look forward to meeting with you and the other supervisors who are interested.
www.milwaukeewfa.org. MilwaukeeWFA.org. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Do you have a card, Karen?
Yes.
I'll take cards. If other committee members would like cards. Anything else on this particular org unit from committee members, supervisors, Wolkowski and Taylor?
They're waiting for facilities, remember?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. One
supervisor,
quick one. I'd ask about the East Wisconsin County Railroad Consortium in the transportation director's office budget, and was told that it's in yours. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. Yes.
And how? Where would that fall in the new chart? Who? One of those project managers would be assigned to figure out how we actually use our membership to. In terms of economic development in this county rather than just being a member?
I look forward to having that conversation. So if there's particular supervisors that have an interest in that consortium to help better advise me on how you would like to participate in meeting your policy goals, I would be very interested in that conversation.
I served on it for a year or more, never had any contact with the department. I now can't serve on it because it actually meets at the same time that our Transportation Public Works Committee meets. But it's always seemed a lost opportunity to me relative to the other counties who were figuring out specifically how to use the rail corridors, the state-owned rail corridors that go right through our county as economic development tools. So thank you.
Thank you for that.
Any other comments, questions? Thank you very much.